Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. Everyone knows it takes a village to raise a child. But in this episode, we find out it also takes a village to make a difference in the lives of thousands of cats in our area. Specifically, Meow Village. Based in Aurora and staffed entirely by volunteers, this amazing nonprofit takes the tough cases, unfriendly and feral cats, the ones they don't make Disney movies about, but they still end up with some pretty heartwarming stories all at the same time.
And with the fate of the Canby Ferry up for discussion by county commissioners this week, we're taking a look back at our series on the ferry's history from our first two episodes. It's a Canby Then callback. You might even call it a retro revival. There's a nice one. Anyway.
Wow!
Strap yourselves in to Chester Mead's Flaming Automobile because it's going to be a wild ride. But first, the news.
The chairman of the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners believes he and his colleagues should seriously consider nixing the idea of a bridge, told or untold, at the current location of the Canby Ferry. A bridge was one of the primary options analyzed during the county's study into the Canby Ferry and the feasibility of various alternatives. The study's findings were revealed at a public meeting held January 15th at the Canby Four Square Church, and the toll bridge seemed like it might be an early favorite for the county leaders, who will ultimately make the decision. In short, the toll bridge was the only proposal that broke even financially. Even ending the ferry would be a cost of an estimated $2 million. Also, the toll bridge seemed to balance the commissioner's desires to use the road funds more effectively. Operating the ferry costs approximately $400,000 more a year than it brings in, while the feasibility study indicated the toll bridge would pay for itself, while still limiting traffic in the rural surrounding areas. A high toll bridge would carry an estimated 2,000 drivers over the bridge each day, which is still 10 times what the ferry sees on average, but it's significantly less than the 16,000 cars predicted to use the bridge if it had no toll at all. The main problem is that the rural residents in the area don't want to see a bridge, believing it would significantly disrupt their way of life, and many community members agree with them. They fear the potential safety impacts and costs of funneling over 2,000 cars a day onto rural roads that currently see closer to 200. During the Board of Commissioners business meeting last week, Chair Jim Bernard said that the message was received loud and clear. In his words, there is no support in the community for a bridge proposal.
I think we should seriously consider removing the bridge from consideration. My understanding is that there was no support for a bridge. We do need to figure out, however, what to do with the ferry.
Those who are against the bridge idea will certainly be relieved to hear this, but it still leaves the open question of what to do with the Canby Ferry. In addition to comments opposing the bridge, a number of citizens at the January 15th meeting offered ways they believe the ferry could be run more profitably, and Bernard says he thinks many of these ideas have merit and should be explored further.
I heard there were some fairly good ideas from the community how we could pay for that.
Yes.
I also think we need to talk about the tourism aspect of the ferry. I mean, my brother came from Nantucket, never been on the ferry. He was just really, loved it, as short a ride as it is.
The commissioner's next decision of the Canby Ferry will be 9:30 a.m. Wednesday at the board hearing meeting in Oregon City. No public comment will be taken on this day, but the meeting is open to the public. Clackamas County Board of Commissioners will hold two public hearings in February on a proposed ordinance to establish a countywide vehicle registration fee of $30 per vehicle per year. Technically, it's $60 every 2 years when you renew your vehicle registration. The hearings will be held Thursday, February 7th at 10 a.m. and Thursday, February 21st at 6 p.m. in the Public Services Building, 2051 Keene Road, Oregon City. The board hearing room is located on the fourth floor. The public is welcome to attend and offer comments of up to 3 minutes each. Written comments may also be submitted by mail or email no later than February 21st. We have those contact details on our website if you're interested. Just visit canbenowpod.com. The proposed fee would apply to cars, pickup trucks, vans, and other passenger vehicles registered in Clackamas County. The fee for motorcycles would be half that proposed for the passenger vehicles. Commissioners are considering the ordinance following years of analysis and discussions with the community, businesses, and cities in the county. Clackamas is the only county in the Portland metro area that doesn't have a local source of funding for road improvement projects. A proposed countywide gas tax that was put before voters in 2016 failed, with over 60% in opposition. In accordance with state law, 40% of the fee revenue would go to cities with a county based on population, 50% would go towards county road improvements, while the remaining 10% will be paid into strategic investment funds for the joint city and county projects. According to Assistant Director of Transportation Mike Besner, the county will use its funds to relieve congestion, maintain local roads, and implement safety improvements. We already have a long list of needed projects in our transportation system plan that was created with extensive public input, he said. Between that list are urgent need to maintain local neighborhood roads and to make needed safety improvements. The additional VRF revenue will enable us to provide transportation improvements on roads throughout our county. More information about the proposed VRF is available online at clackamas.us/transportation/VRF. The Canby Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will meet Tuesday night at City Council Chambers to collect public input on the location of the proposed splash pad, a water feature that has been on the community's wish list for many years. The location that is ultimately chosen will have ripple effects on the city's entire park system and its future development. Maintenance staff and outside experts will be on hand to share information and answer questions, and light refreshments will be available. The meeting starts at 6:30 p.m. In a memo to the City Council earlier this month, the board ranked the perceived pros and cons of the three parks considered favorites for the amenity: Maple Street Park, Waite Park, and Legacy Park. Of the three, Maple Street was considered to have the most pros, including utilities, parking, restrooms, and covered picnic area. The board says that they also considered alternative locations, including the Canby Swim Center, Ackerman Center, the old public library, and a site near the new public library. The memo says that these locations were dropped for various reasons, but didn't elaborate any further. After hearing public comment on Tuesday, the board will make a recommendation to the City Council, who are responsible for the final decision. According to the memo, the Parks Board would like to see the project fast-tracked, such that the new splash pad would be in use as early as this summer, if possible.
In sports this week, the Canby girls basketball team snapped their dismal 9-game losing streak in dramatic fashion. They ended regulation Tuesday night tied with the home team Tiger Tigers, but the Cougs would not be denied, coming away with a 53-48 victory in overtime. They followed up with a thrilling triple overtime game against Lake Oswego on the road, in which they also squeaked out the win, 77-75. Way to go, Cougars! They'll be at home both games this week, hosting St. Mary's on Tuesday, then more drama on Friday as Tiger comes to town looking for a little revenge. Action starts at 7 p.m. The Cougar boys basketball team, meanwhile, continued to struggle in league play. They lost both of their home games, falling to Tualatin on Tuesday, 62-43, then struggling predictably against number 1 overall Lake Oswego on Friday. They're 1-5 in league play and 6-11 overall. They have just one game this week as they hit the road to face Tiger on Friday. In swimming, Oregon City visited Canby at the Canby Swim Center on Thursday. The Cougar men came away with their first win of the season by a score of 97-67, while the Oregon City women defeated Canby with a score of 109-61. Overall, the Cougars competed well in each race and came away with a number of key victories. On the men's side, Connor DiRizzio finished first in the 100-meter fly and second in the 500 free. Hunter DiRizzio finished first in the 100 back with a new personal best time and second in the 200 free. Jordan Spencer was first in the 200 individual medley and second in the 100 breaststroke. And Bjorn Leitnant was first in the 100 breaststroke and third in the 100 fly. For the women, Marin Chard was first in the 50 and second in the 100 free. Kira Getfert finished second in the 100 fly and 100 back. Alora Robbins finished second in the 500 free and third in the 200 free. Up next will be the final dual meet of the season, Thursday, January 31st at the Canby Swim Center against West Lynn.
For some people who enjoy a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region. It actually can be a little overwhelming, but it's also very exciting if you have the right guide. That's why I love visiting the FOB Tap Room in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beers, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles, and their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB.
Courage, a poem by Robert William Service, read by Ed Grotsky.
Today I opened wide my eyes and stared with wonder and surprise to see beneath November skies an apple blossom peer. Upon a branch as bleak as night, it gleamed exultant on my sight, a fairy beacon burning bright of hope and cheer. Alas, said I, poor foolish thing, have you mistaken this for spring? Behold, the thrush has taken wing, and winter's near. Serene it seemed to lift its head. The winter's wrath I do not dread, because I am, it proudly said, a pioneer. Some apple blossoms must be first, with beauty's urgency to burst into a world of joy athirst, and so I dare. And I shall see what none shall see. December skies gloom over me, and mock them with my April glee, a fearless fair. And I shall hear what none shall hear, the hardy robin piping clear, the storm king gallop dark and drear across the sky. And I shall know what none shall know, the silent kisses of the snow, the Christmas candle's silver glow before I die. Then from your frost-gemmed windowpane, one morning you will look in vain, my smile of delicate disdain, no more to see. But though I pass before my time, and perish in the gate and crime, maybe you'll have a little rhyme to spare for me.
I'm here with Leanne Garrison, with a volunteer with Meow Village. Leanne, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for being on the show today. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, what is Meow Village? I think a lot of times people think of just shelter, like everything kind of the shelter model. Mm-hmm. And you guys are very different than that. So tell us a little bit about what it is for folks that may not be familiar.
Our main focus is being a feral cat rescue. There are lots of organizations and rescues that take in friendly cats. Mm-hmm. We are the ones that are out there catching those ones that are trapping them, I should say, that are in the wild, not being fed, nobody caring for them. So we go out and get them. Now, we do have social cats, but mostly those come from 2 points. One is feral cats that are pregnant, have kittens. We raise those kittens, socialize them, and find them homes.
Okay.
The other is if...
You try and get them young.
We do. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have many of them that are born in our foster homes.
Is it hard to tame a feral cat once they're older?
It's almost impossible. Not that it doesn't happen ever, but very seldom.
Is it harder than teaching an old dog new tricks?
Oh, yes.
I hear that's hard as well.
Yes, okay. Because a lot of feral cats can even be pretty vicious.
Sure.
So it's a touchy kind of thing to try to do.
Yeah, yeah. So go on.
Oh, so we get the pregnant cats, have the kittens. They are in somebody's home. And they socialize the kittens, and then we have them adopted. I actually had a pregnant feral cat in my home, and she trusted us enough that we could take her kittens away to socialize them, and she calmed down.
Yeah.
Not that she ever got friendly, but she calmed down.
Yeah, she's like, I'm sort of okay with this. Yeah. We're still watching, like, one eye open when she's sleeping. Are feral cats a big problem in our area?
Huge problem.
Yeah.
And one of the things that a lot of people don't know is Female cats can get pregnant as young as 4 months old.
Oh my gosh.
They can have two or three litters of kittens a year.
Yeah.
And
that's just media influence, I think. Babies having babies. Anyway.
Yeah. And yeah. I'll tell you, you just do the math on a few of those.
That's
and
crazy.
Hundreds and
four
hundreds.
Months.
Yes.
When are they fully grown?
Well, I'd say 2 years.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
Yeah. And yeah. usually it's around 6 months, but we've had them as young as probably 4 months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And why is it such a problem in our area? Is it a lot of farms, a lot of barn cats that just the populations grow? They're not, they weren't fixed or whatever?
Yes,
or?
I think that's a lot of it. We yeah. get many stories of a call, could we come and get 20 cats from them? And we're like, 20 cats? How'd you get 20 cats?
Right, yeah.
Well, someone dropped off a pregnant one.
Cat.
Last year,
yeah.
and within a year, they've got 20 cats.
Yeah, they just multiply fast.
And we really try. Our first choice, if someone has a lot of feral cats, is to do a TNR, which is a trap, neuter, and return.
Okay.
If they're being fed and have a warm, dry place, that's wonderful.
Okay.
If a lot of times there isn't a caregiver, somebody moved, left the cats, then we will trap the cats, get them vetted, neutered, spayed,
yeah.
vaccinated,
yeah.
and then find them a barn home.
Yeah, yeah. So you kind of have an interesting story you were telling me about how you got involved in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You live out toward Banks out in the country, have your own experiences with
yes.
feral cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we got four cats mm-hmm. About 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And the mice in my husband's shop were not too appealing to
right.
him. And I actually counted their...
They weren't like the Cinderella mice.
No,
they
weren't
helping.
They weren't helping.
No, no. Okay.
But I counted the dead mice up until 200 and then I gave up.
Yeah.
But they were very busy
the
cats.
The cats
yeah.
were, yeah. Yeah.
Very.
Yeah. But you said you had trouble kind of finding places when you would trap a feral cat, places that you could take them in your
Absolutely.
Area.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are always looking for barn homes.
Yeah.
And we have a pretty sophisticated program where we get the cats. Any cat that's brought to you has been fully vetted,
yeah.
has the rabies shots. And we bring you what we call an acclimation shelter, a
okay.
cage. For $30 a cat, what we provide is the cage, food for that 3 week acclimation time. That helps the cats get used to this being their house.
Yeah.
It's safe. There's food here. And then we, after 3 weeks, you open the door and the cats say, oh, this is my home now,
right.
and hopefully they stay.
right, right. And the benefit to folks for who might be interested in doing that would be, obviously, your...
natural rodent control.
Natural rodent control is yeah. what you're getting out of the deal, but you're also helping a cat, you
oh,
know,
absolutely.
That probably does not have a good life, might wind up getting hit by a car,
yes.
You know, or
predators. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And all we ask people is that they provide them a warm, dry place and feed them
good
every
food.
Day.
Yeah.
yeah. That does not detract them from rodent control
right.
feeding them.
Right.
So.
Right. They usually
yeah.
don't eat them. They just,
yeah.
they're just proud of it.
Yes.
Know, they'll just pass them along to you.
Hunting,
yes.
playing.
Hunting and playing.
Yeah.
Well, how many volunteers do you think you have?
I think there's probably between 30 and 40 right now.
Yeah.
Most of those are foster homes for the different cats that we take in,
yeah.
The kittens. Then there's a certain group, a section of those people, which is smaller, that do the trapping
yeah.
and barn deliveries.
Yeah.
We even have got people that transport between vet and wherever the cats are trapped.
Sure.
and their foster homes.
Yeah.
So it's really a village of people that get things done.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah, yeah, that's awesome. And cats.
Yes.
So I think it's awesome. I found the website. I found some of the social media. It's a huge thing. I mean, when you look at the numbers, hundreds and thousands of cats that have been served, rehomed,
yes.
through the work of Meow Village
yes.
and its volunteers. And
yes.
it's right here in Aurora,
yes.
where it's based. I don't remember if I mentioned that. But it's a really awesome thing. But I wanted to ask you, you know, kind of zooming in from the numbers a little bit about a few stories, because I mentioned the social media. Social media and cats is kind of a thing. People always posting things. The photos that you find through the Meow Village social media are a little bit different. These are often cats that have had very sad lives, might have disease or whatnot, but have been able to, Meow Village has been able to help them and change their lives and make that impact. So I was hoping you could tell us a few of these stories, and we do have some pictures that we can show. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Let's start with Blue.
Yeah. Blue was out in Mahamna, I believe is how you say it. This was a organ or a farm that was, I guess I'd call it a hoarder, that there was garbage and junk everywhere. And one of our volunteers had tried to go out and trap there before, and the people didn't want help.
Oh, okay.
And so they moved.
Yeah.
And so our volunteer went out and trapped. And you look at Blue. Blue looks like he would rip you. She looks like she could rip you apart if you got too close.
Yeah, it does not look like a friendly cat.
Yeah.
And doesn't look healthy, obviously.
No,
I mean, you look at that cat, skin and bones.
And Sherry brought Blue them all into her home. They trapped 11 cats.
Yeah.
Brought Blue in. And Blue turned out to be a fairly friendly cat. And she was so stained from urine and garbage, it was hard to know that she was even an all-white cat.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got
some after pictures.
After pictures here, yes. There you go. And so this was shortly after she was trapped, but we could tell she was a friendly cat.
Mm-hmm.
And then after she got cleaned up and vetted, and this is her now. And she's still looking for a home.
Yeah.
And but she's a very...
whole different cat.
Yes, whole different cat. She's going to have a much better life now.
Right. And for you guys listening on the podcast, obviously, this is a little bit different audio for you. So we will be posting these pictures through our in the story notes and through our social media. This one's kind of dark and hard to see.
This is Holly, and I actually am the one that went and picked her up from a acreage out in Hillsboro, and she was a feral cat, and when I picked her up and looked in this carrier, half of her face was gone.
Yes.
Even the skin over her teeth was gone.
Yeah. Some kind of car thing, you think?
Well, we think that this was probably either a raccoon or a coyote that it looked like claws had taken off her face.
Poor thing.
Yes, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And
without Mount Meow Village, a lot of these cats would be probably trapped and put down, I would imagine.
Well, and a lot of people say, you know, we've called so many places.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm very proud about Meow Village is they don't ask how hurt they are, how old they are, are they adoptable?
Right.
We
right. Are they friendly?
Yeah. We do what we can to help them.
Yeah.
And Holly.
That's so cool.
Holly, I took her in, and before I got back to my car, the vet tech came out and said they don't think they can save her,
right.
And we both cried, and you know it was so hard. And an hour later, I get a phone call, and they said, is it okay if we try and save her? And I'm like, what? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the vet went to give her her shot, and she raised up off the table and headbutted her and started to purr.
Yeah. She had some fighting her.
Yeah, it was like, okay, and she's a young cat. Well, she took her home, and it was touch and go for a while, but... the vet's mother adopted her, and she is, we've got some after pictures of Holly, and it was amazing. This is her, and the thing I like about this picture is there's so much life in that eye that you don't even notice the other side of her face is gone.
Right.
And she's
I'm sure she doesn't notice either.
No, she is a wonderful, wonderful, happy cat.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have another eye one. This one came out recently on the social media. I am on Team Pickles. I've been following his story. Another sad one. This one was a car, I believe.
This was the car, yes.
He had been run over.
Yes.
Yeah.
And his hind end was kind of broken. We're still not sure if his tail's going to make it or not.
Yeah.
But... poor Pickles, and he was an owned cat that got out.
And I just want to say, you know, if folks are kind of grossed out by some of these pictures, like, this is just stuff that's real.
These are things
that people in our community are dealing with and trying to help with. And I do think it's important to show these pictures.
Yes. So. It's hard to look at, but we took this cat in, and the people that owned it, it was a loved cat. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but they couldn't afford this.
They didn't think that, they couldn't afford the care.
Yeah, so they surrendered him to us, and we've got an aftercare. Even at this cat, as
you can see some personality.
Yes, you can see how hurt this cat is, and yet he was not terrified. This is him after his surgery. Yep. He's doing well.
Yeah.
He's
looking for a home too, I think.
Yes, but he'll be in care for another, you know, few weeks until he's fully recovered. But he's doing very well.
And again, that one eye, you can see the personality and the life coming through. Okay, I'm excited to hear about this one, Teddy.
Oh, Teddy, yes. Teddy was, he's got quite a reputation.
I think, was on Canby Now, the Facebook page. People might possibly remember. He was known as, like, the gas station cat.
Yep, and he was, several people tried to trap him.
I'm
sure they have the scars to tell the stories. He did not want to be trapped.
Yeah.
We kind of thought he was pretty feral. Well, when we finally got him, which it didn't take too long to trap him, got him into the vet, it turned out he was fairly friendly, and he is a majority Maine Coon cat, which, as you probably know, get very large.
Yes, they do.
And
I'm from Maine, actually. We used to have a Maine Coon cat. Yeah,
I've got a couple of pictures. Here he is. He's starting to fill out a little bit, getting some regular meals.
And he was more used to people, I think, than maybe some of the ones that you find in the woods.
You know, once they get over their terror of being trapped and people trying to grab them, he is now with a family that is very used to Maine Coons, and he is running the house already.
Right. Once they realize these people will feed me and be my servants, they decide that they like
the... They start giving them orders.
They like the arrangement. Okay, we got one more here. This is Thundercat.
This is, again...
Look how skinny the before and after. I like having them side by side like that.
And this is another one that we thought was pretty vicious.
Yeah.
Now, Thundercat, when we take cats in, we test them for what's called FIV, which is a contagious feline disease. Mm-hmm. It's a very painful death once it starts taking over. So it's hard to find people that understand FIV, that a cat can live a long, healthy life.
So they just want to put them down.
Yes. And so it took a while to find him the right home, and he is in that home now, and he has another cat there, and
so
they play.
No, FIV.
So it is one of those that...
A Siamese friend?
Yes. Yeah. And if they're social, you know, it's spread through scratching and biting. And if they're social and in a safe place, they don't spread the disease. So.
Sure. Yeah. So, Leanne, we're almost out of time here. I wanted to wrap up with just kind of even just hearing those stories. My heart hurts for some of these cats. What is the impact that you've experienced through this work with Meow Village of seeing some of the pain and some of the really sad cases, realizing, you know, that this stuff happens probably more often than a lot of people like to think, but also being able to see that you can oftentimes help and make an improvement in these tough situations for cats.
The thing that's really important that we tell each other all the time is we can't save them all, but we can save as many as we can.
Yeah.
We really depend on people's donations. We are 100% volunteer organization. We have no shelter.
Yeah.
The cats live in people's homes and garages.
Yeah.
86% of the money we take in is spent on vet care. 12% is on food and medicine, and the rest is on supplies.
Yeah.
We really depend on those donations that you can do either through a button on our Facebook page or our website.
Yeah.
You can also select us as your charity of choice on Fred Meyers.
Okay.
and Amazon Prime. Yeah. Every little bit helps.
That's Amazon Smiles?
Smile, I think. Yes, yes, sorry. Yeah. Amazon Smile.
Yes.
We also, for our barn cat programs, we always are looking for blankets and sheets to cover our acclimation cages.
Yeah.
We had a lovely experience a year ago where the Boy Scouts made us what we call sleep boxes, where we take the boxes that paper come in and make little doors and put towels in them and stuff, and that's what go in the acclimation cages.
Okay, yeah.
So we've had some real good community involvement.
That's great.
I will say one thing I'd like to ask for, or two things really, barn homes for our feral cats to go to.
Yeah.
And the second thing is we are really in search of a vet partner in the Salem area.
Oh, okay.
Right now, our two vets that work with us to keep the cost down of vet care is Willamette Valley in their Tualatin and Gladstone offices. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of volunteers in the Salem area, and that's a lot of driving. So we're looking for a vet to partner with in that area. So if anybody knows of anybody.
So all you Salem vets
that
are watching.
Love to hear from you at Meow Village.
But I do bet we have some viewers and some listeners that have a barn. And we have a barn. We already have quite a few cats, but we may be able to take on a few more. If people are interested, where can they find you?
You can find us on meowvillage.org on the web or our Facebook page of Meow Village. What we deliver to you is a spayed, neutered, vaccinated pet.
Yeah.
So that we aren't having lots more kittens.
Sure.
So they are ready to go. They're healthy and
just in need of a home.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Leanne.
Absolutely.
I love hearing the stories. And like I said, even though they're not like the most fun stories or the best cat pictures you can find on the internet, they're important, I think, to see
Absolutely.
And to hear those stories of what's happening in our community and how people can potentially help as well.
Absolutely.
So, cool. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Frankie.
How's it going, man?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. You feeling good? Body strong?
Nope, not at all. I'm super sick.
Nice.
It's awful.
Sorry to hear that.
I'm sure everybody listening to this episode is
oh, great. Tyler's sick again.
Great. Yeah, and they're making him cough in my ears while he tells us about the fairy.
I offered to read more of the stories. You just
weren't
being patient. Yeah.
You're just sitting there writing all these stories, and I'm sitting here not producing anything.
Well, I mean, isn't that usually how it goes, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
This is the Can Be Now Soapbox. Welcome. Thanks for tuning in. This is where we kind of just talk about things that are interesting to us or that are facing the community, maybe share our opinions at times, which is what we'll be doing today.
We're changing the landscape of the political politics of Canby.
I mean, did you guys just feel that? There was earthquakes that just happened. Like,
because of,
we haven't because even of started us. Yet, but it's just like the early tremors. Yeah. So the Canby Fairy. This is fun because this is like a big time callback to our very first episode, which was very
four and
fairy
a half
themed.
Months ago.
Yeah. you want to tell the story? If folks didn't listen, we may still have a few.
Well, I'm not exactly sure which story you want me to tell.
So tell them what we did for our very first soapbox, which wasn't even called soapbox.
No, it wasn't. But it was technically our first out and about is what we called it.
That's true.
And we did our story on the ferry, and we wanted to read some of the comments that people had
from the meeting.
About what's going on with the ferry and
I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
Tell the story, Tyler, but right. I want to tell
it. Was their feedback for what to do with the ferry as the county was starting their study of the various alternatives.
Yeah.
I won't interrupt more than three.
No,
four
no,
times.
It's all right. Yeah. It's fine. And so we went out to the ferry, rode on it and recorded kind of our conversation about it along with some of the comments, which some of them were really funny.
Yeah.
I remember you really liked one in particular.
Do you remember what it was?
No, I don't. I don't remember.
Do you believe that I remember it?
Yes, I believe it very much.
It was So there were no names or anything, so we don't know who it was. But the comment was awesome. It was very short. It was leave our ferry alone and go to Portland.
Right. Bridges in Portland.
Go to Portland to use bridges. Yeah, thank you. Leave our ferry alone and go to Portland to use bridges.
I
love that sassiness.
And then we talked about some other stuff. I ended up having to cut out a few of my comments because, I talked about
how... We rambled and...
I was trying to be funny, and I pointed out that the current ferryman was definitely not in the KKK.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, that joke is a little much for our first episode.
Because we also had the history segment about the first ferryman.
Which
possibly
is coming up next, so you'll be able to hear that if you haven't heard about that.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Just that. And then we actually got to meet the ferryman, talk to him, and explain what we were doing. And
he was very confused.
Yeah, he didn't know what a podcast was. But then the other guy that was working the ferry knew, podcast? Oh, that's cool. So it was a pretty fun day just to kind of go out at the end of summer.
We were very nervous.
We didn't know what we were doing.
We didn't know what we were doing, and the podcast didn't even really exist. I mean, it only existed theoretically in our heads at that point. So when we're trying to describe what it is, it's very it's going to be this, we hope. it was super fun. And if you guys can't hear, we're on the ferry again, right?
Yeah. Thank you for getting on the ferry.
Yeah, that was good, actually.
Yeah, thank you.
That was my first time on the ferry.
Was it?
I'd never ridden it before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd been on it a few times.
And then I rode it twice because we turned around and took it back.
And they made us drive off and turn around. They wouldn't let you just stay in the same spot.
No, because you can't back off the ferry.
Right.
It did make sense.
It totally made sense.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate that we had to pay twice. It's like you're going back anyway, but... So that was our first sort of soapbox, even though we didn't call it that then. The ferry's back in the news. We now have the study that was just starting back then.
Yeah.
And the county will be talking about it this Thursday, kind of receiving that report that Canby people got at the Foursquare Church a couple weeks back. And they won't be making a decision that day. There's still going to be some opportunity for public comment. We have all those dates and things on our website. February 19th, I believe, is the date for people to come and give your opinions directly to the county commissioners. But this will be the first opportunity to sort of get a read on maybe how they're leaning.
Yeah.
The big issues will be the bridge, bridge or no bridge.
Are we doing a bridge?
Are we doing a
bridge? Is it going to be told? Is it going to be untold?
I feel like it's really the untold bridge is the DOA.
Yeah.
It's just too expensive.
Sure.
There's no support really for a tolled bridge anyway.
Right.
That would basically pay for itself, or at least according to their study, it would. So for to build a bridge that would cost $60 million.
And then not make any money
well,
off of it.
Yeah, and then it just comes out of the taxpayer. That's going to be a pretty hard sell.
Sure.
Plus, it would drag, thousands and thousands of cars through roads that aren't made to support that. So,
Holly. It'll put it through Holly.
Well, so their counts for an untold bridge would be 16,000 cars a day.
Right.
For roads that currently see about 200 to 300.
Right.
So,
I get it. It's going to be more than one road, but it's just Holly. It's all that people load
on
to.
On the other
to.
Side, it's...
We don't care about the other side. That's Wilsonville. Yeah. Is this Wilsonville now? No, it's Canby now. We'll get to you guys when we get Wilsonville now started.
Anyway, I don't agree with that. Wilsonville listeners, of which I'm sure we have...
So I'm sure we have someone in
we love both of you. We do. We've had 7 downloads this month from
and
the UK.
Sweden.
It's crazy. Thank you. Shout out to our UK listeners.
If you guys are in Europe,
tweet us. Oh my
please
gosh.
Let us know.
That would
we
be awesome.
We sit around wondering who this is. If you listen to our show and you are not in the United States, please contact us.
That'd be sweet.
You can contact me at Tyler CanbyNowPod.com.
So we'll start to hear what the county commissioner is thinking, but we got an early surprise. It was not expected because the ferry wasn't on the agenda, but the chair of the Board of Commissioners, Jim Bernard, was just like, yeah, I think we should seriously lean toward doing away with the bridge at their meeting this Thursday.
Sorry, I was just testing my mic.
Yeah, you always like do weird things and make me scared. Like, well, it's I'm not recording or something.
I'm looking at our waves right now, and as you were talking, my waves were jumping as much as yours.
Oh.
So I was really worried that I had put both of our tracks on your mic. And okay. So I was just going to sound like this the whole time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Great audio for the listeners, as always, to explain how the sausage is made. But yeah, so it looks like Canby people will be psyched, I think, to hear this. And our Wilsonville people on the other side, because the people that are super invested in this are, I think, primarily the folks that live in these areas that don't want the bridge. And the meeting was crazy. Like, everyone was against the bridge. People had signs that had bridges on them with, like, an X through them. It was like, no bridge. So to really, make a sign is something that I don't see at a lot of public meetings. Like, obviously I have people.
Should we start selling merch in one of our first merch shirts? Be like, no bridges in Canby, or like, I don't know. Your bridges home. I don't know.
I don't think Canby people are against bridges. Like,
in general
at every location.
So far it sounds like they are.
I think they just don't want it here. Cause I think they're afraid. And this is, let me just say, like, the county's study indicated that it would be mostly Canby people that use it.
Yeah.
But that is not, people don't always believe traffic studies and things.
Sure.
And I think the fear is that it's going to bring, obviously, more people onto those roads, but even like bring people through Canby, more people through Canby, more people into 99E, just passing through, not even like, you know, patronizing businesses or whatever.
But it could also open up the opportunity for new patrons of businesses, especially businesses down like at the Malala State Park or at the Pumpkin Patch down there. Frontier Golf is down there. There's a lot of stuff that people would pass by going by that road.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything wrong with adding more traffic to that one road if it can build that area up.
Yeah. And just to devil's advocate a little bit, though, I mean, it's mostly going to be commuters who don't really, I mean, like, they're on their way to work or they're on their way home. They're not like, oh, I'll stop for a quick round of golf or I'll check out the dahlias, you know, at the Swan Island Dahlias. So anyway. What was your opinion in the first, do you remember?
What I think that they should do is really work on creating a feeling of nostalgia more than what we have with it. Cause right now it's like, oh, the Canby Ferry, but you go down. It's just a thing. Like, it's just this metal, nothing platform that goes back and forth. It doesn't really have that feel of nostalgia. They could make it look really cool. Like, even, I know it might not necessarily be the most authentic thing, but you could make it look like a little steamboat or something, or like, you know, the big wheel turning boats. I'm so sorry.
Oh, like a river boat?
Yeah, like a river boat with the paddles and stuff, and like really make it a big thing. And then on either side of it, like I had talked about it back when we first went there, there's a whole space there where you could make a nice little park. You could set up a big thing where it talks about the history of it a little bit more and really get into making it a destination. That's the word I was looking for earlier. Yeah. Giving it a purpose for, like, hey, we're going to go to downtown Canby, and, you know, 5 minutes from downtown Canby is the ferry. So let's hit the ferry real quick. Or maybe let's go down and have lunch at the Canby Ferry and check it out. And something to where it's worth going and planning a day and making that a part of your stop. Not just because you're a commuter. And it's not just a utilitarian sort of thing. It is a fun-looking, cool homage to back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree with you. I don't necessarily think there's a ton of support to, like, invest a lot of money in changing the way it looks necessarily, but I do think they need to decide, like, is this transportation or is it tourism, you know?
Sure.
Because I think they admit that's kind of one of the reasons the study happened. It's not very good in transportation, you know. It's not super efficient. So that's kind of why we're like, maybe we don't even need it, because it's not a huge player in our transportation system. And it's definitely not, I don't know anyone who would dispute this, that it's not fully capturing its tourism piece.
Right.
So I think they need to decide which, you know, really what is it primarily going to do. If it's going
to... What they need to do is open a restaurant. I'm not joking even. Yeah. I know it might be a little outlandish, but if you opened a restaurant down on the river and you made it the Ferryman Restaurant or something, and it was...
I actually like the idea. I thought you meant on the boat.
And no, like, no. But it's just...
You've got 3 minutes, people.
You go down to the restaurant, you eat maybe right on the river, and the ferry's going back and forth.
Beautiful, yeah.
It would be a great idea.
I actually really like that idea. I have no idea if it would be possible zoning-wise or anything like that, but maybe some food carts could go down there or something.
Oh, we could get a food cart Landia, but Ferrylandia. That doesn't work.
Boatlandia.
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, just to your point, like, it's been interesting, you know, even this was a few months ago when we did that history series, but going through those stories and just seeing, like, how much love there has been for the ferry over the years. Like, you know, it had this nickname, like the Clackamas County Navy, it was called for many years, and everybody had a Canby ferry story that they loved to tell. And then when the city of Canby had their centennial, they hosted a bunch of stuff at the ferry.
They,
at the time, the ferry was free, but they, like, sold, quote unquote, sold tickets to ride on the ferry. Right. Like, it was... cost $0, but they were like commemorative tickets just to make it a thing, like, and it was like that was part of people's centennial celebration, was just to take the ferry and take it back, you know, and it's become this thing that I think the county very much sees as a burden, and I think that's never going to be something that they're not really proud of or whatnot, you know. I think that sort of comes through,
right?
So I do think that recapturing some of that that feeling of, like you said, nostalgia and just really a source of pride, maybe advertising it, maybe making it so, like, you could use a credit card in 2019 might be cool. I mean, just, like, there are simple ways, I think, that they could make a lot more money with it. Or if they want to just make it part of the transportation system, I honestly feel like that could be done more efficiently as well. I've even talked to, like, transportation, you know, the transportation people about maybe not running it as much as they do, like maybe only running it in peak hours. So you don't have all that staff time. You don't have all that wear on the boat, you know? So something like that. But my opinion hasn't really changed either. What about you? It's pretty much the same.
No, honestly, if anything, it's expanded.
Yeah.
I've gone from a small little park to a whole freaking restaurant.
Right. Well, it is good to hear, again, from Jim Bernard, just in those very brief comments, but he seemed like he was, you know, and the people at the meeting had better ideas than even I do, you know, believe it or not. Like, but yeah, the folks that have that love for the ferry and are very invested in it, and it's great to hear, potentially, that the county is open to that and listening to those ideas. So
yeah, it's super cool.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, it will.
I'm waiting for you to ask me the question.
Oh, yeah? Is that what's happening?
For our next segment. Yeah,
so, hey, Frankie.
We kind of petered off.
So, hey, Frankie, got any feedback for me?
I do. So, we are currently in the midst of our first giveaway campaign.
Right.
We are asking folks to, well, we always ask folks to give us reviews and recommendations.
But now we're giving them something in return.
Exactly. So we're asking folks to give us reviews on Apple Podcasts / iTunes and on recommendations on Facebook.
Yep.
If you do that, you're entered to win, or if you've already done that, you're entered to win some really cool merch that we'll be announcing on our Valentine's Day show, February 14th. We'll have a sweatshirt, we'll have some headphones, we'll be giving away some stickers. So
I need these headphones so I can use them during production.
Well, you're not eligible.
Oh, yeah. What if I go rate us and review us?
No.
Oh.
I'll just throw you out. But we've had quite a few folks already take advantage of that, and we'd love to have more. So please do that if you haven't taken a chance yet. You've got a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
But I am going to read a few here. Okay. So Frank Mickle, he says, Well, I have to say, this is on Facebook, I have to say I was kind of hesitant when I first heard about the Can Be Now podcast. Mm. But after following you guys and watching some great news information coming from here, I have to say 5 stars.
5 stars.
I don't know how to read this because it's got 6 exclamation points and it's in all caps. So I feel like I should scream it, but I'm not going
to
do that.
Why don't you go to the other side of the room?
5 stars! It's very well planned and produced perfectly.
Hey!
I hope the time comes when the Can Be Now podcast is our one-stop shop for all things news related to Can Be. Great job so far, and I'm very excited to see where the future takes us.
Well, Mr. Mickle, I agree that this is perfectly produced. Actually, it's very not perfectly produced, but we're getting better.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Really, really appreciate
that. That's a great review. I really like that. Thank you, buddy. We have, well, you know, where'd it go?
I don't know. You're the one looking at your phone.
Okay. Most ranked by most recent Facebook changed on me. Here it is. Nancy Ann Eads? How would you say that?
Do not ask me how to say people's last names.
E-A-D-S.
I will be going down in Canby history as the worst name pronunciation guy ever.
Yeah, well, that history is pretty short at this point. Nancy, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, but I'm going to say it's Eads. She says, I love to you guys for all you do for Canby. Short and sweet. I like that.
Nice.
Thank you very much. We love to do it. Our friend of the show, Gordon Christensen from CTV5, he says, I've had a great time working with Tyler and Tyler, partnering with them, and CTV Channel 5. We have enjoyed it as well, Gordon.
Super cool guy. That. Very fun to learn from him.
Yeah.
I also like Sarah Waffle. Counselor Sarah Waffle.
Her counselor name is Sarah Spoon.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I've never heard her go by Sarah Waffle, actually. It's either Spoon or Spoon Waffle.
All right, fine. Sarah Spoon Waffle.
Don't mess
up people's names who I know. That's how bad I am.
Yeah,
he's
sitting across Sarah, atop the patriarchy.
Counselor
here.
Sarah uh-huh. always introduces me as Tyler One.
Right.
And she's very adamant about it.
Yeah.
It makes me very happy because to literally everybody else in Canby, no, I'm the other Tyler.
Not everybody. Not everybody. Just most people. I got a couple of Apple.
Yeah, let's hear those. I don't ever get to see Apple reviews ever, so.
You can just go to...
I know how to do it. Okay. I'm just saying I don't do it.
Okay. So the reason you don't get to is because...
Of
you,
me.
You don't do it.
Yeah.
I don't get to because of my own
I didn't
self.
Offer up the explanation because I knew it was awful.
Okay. Taylor, WKRP, he says, love the great feel of the city podcast. Mm. Love the tone and feel of the show. The Tylers have a good rapport without being obnoxious, like some Talk About It podcast.
What are you talking about? All right.
Shots fired at other podcasts. Interviews are concise and informative.
Nice.
So that's another nod to the production, I think, because people don't realize how much.
You're the one that does the interviewing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But sometimes they have to be trimmed. And then Jacob and Olivia, they say great local podcast, very informative and entertaining.
Nice.
Thanks, Jacob and Olivia.
It's so nice to hear that people like the show and that they're saying the things that we want to be when we started, when we wanted to say informative and entertaining.
We want it to be great. We want it to be better than all those other Talk About It podcasts.
Yeah.
It's so obnoxious.
We don't want to be obnoxious.
So keep those reviews coming, please. 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can win some free stuff, and it really does help us out. It helps us for folks that are looking for new podcasts or like wondering, hey, should I check out this weird Can Be Now show that I'm seeing all the time on Facebook?
Yeah.
They can go to our Facebook and see all these great comments and say, you know what? I'm definitely going to check it out.
So. I did have one more thing, and this isn't really feedback. It was just one of the coolest moments for me.
Oh.
We did have a listener who was at a chamber of commerce meeting.
Uh-huh.
She told me that she didn't really recognize who I was until I started talking.
Yeah.
And then she immediately knew who I was.
Yeah.
And that to me was 100% one of the coolest moments I've had in my life. The idea that people can recognize me by my voice.
Yeah. It's like, oh, people are listening.
It's very cool.
Yeah. I do get some people recognize me just because I'm always posting stuff like in Canby Now, posting articles, so my face is attached to it.
Yeah.
So I do randomly, like, people in the grocery store, like, do double takes. And I'm like,
yeah. Who's that?
Yeah. Or they'll just straight up, like, just start talking to me about, like, I have no idea who they are. Right. And they'll just straight up be like, so what, I like that story about whatever. Like, so what do you think about that? You know, and just like, can you
That's super cool,
can
man.
Can you ring up my milk, please? No, I'm just kidding.
I love it. I love if I'm ever ordering Taco Bell or something from you and you recognize my voice over the intercom, just let me know.
Cool. Are you Tyler 1, by the way? Okay, so history.
History, here we go.
Thanks for listening, guys. Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily. Find them at the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. Founded by some of the city's pioneer families and serving as an early lifeline to local merchants and farmers, the Canby Ferry looms large in Canby's history. Not often was it said, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it in the early days of Clackamas County. That's because you'd hardly ever come across a bridge. Ferry boats were how you cross a river in those days, and the Canby Ferry was a later addition than most. The first ferry was purchased in Newburgh in 1914 by Mayor W.H. Baer and a Canby State Bank representative with $500 in funds raised by local businessmen. Their desire was to connect Canby with a large trading district on the other side of the Willamette, as well as to expand the reach of the annual Clackamas County Fair. The first ferry captain was a man named Clem Dollar, who shuttled travelers back and forth for a city salary of $10 a month. Dollar was a local real estate agent with a colorful history. In 1915, he was arrested following a raid on an illegal bar that had been secretly established inside the Oregon City Moose Lodge. Dollar and another lodge member were arrested for, quote, using abusive language, and were sentenced to 30 days in jail, which was later suspended, and a $10 fine. Remember, that was a month's salary for Clem. According to an article in the Oregonian, Dollar was also rumored to be a high-ranking officer in the local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. In 1922, Dollar repeatedly moved his real estate business to new office space in Oregon City and allowed the KKK to occupy the front room of his suite. At that time, the local Klan had approximately 250 members. Dollar later moved to West Lynn, where he served on the school board, the fair board, and the city council. The city's first ferry was soon replaced, as was its first ferryman. In 1917, the second ferry was built by Frank E. Dodge, a Canby builder, at a cost of $238, $12 under budget. The ferry was 44 feet long and 12 feet wide. It was made of wood with a gas-driven 6-horsepower engine. Edward Kilgallen, who lost an arm in childhood, took over ferry duties from Clem, though his wages were reduced to $7.50 per month. After years of service, he was found dead in the boathouse at the ferry slip in 1932. His busiest month had been in August of that year, when he reported making 1,261 trips, carrying 1,942 passengers. The first automobile to cross over on the Canby Ferry was a Ford driven by Cap Smith on September 9, 1915. Along for the ride were Wilson Evans, George Meeks, and Glenn E. Brookins, the editor and soon-to-be owner of the local paper, who would rename it the Canby Herald the following year. The machine was transported across the river in record time, Brookins would later record. A slightly stranger episode involving an automobile occurred in 1924, when a man named Chester Meade parked near the Canby Ferry. He left his vehicle by the side of the road to fetch an axe in the woods, came back only to find the back of his car engulfed in 5 feet of flames. Apparently, driver education courses were not as robust in the 1920s as they are today, because Chester promptly got in, started his car, and drove straight into the Willamette in an effort to extinguish the blaze. I mean, it worked, but it took days to fish the damaged automobile from the river. Theodore Neep served as ferryman from 1933 to 1942. He and his family lived in a house on the South Landing, furnished by the county. Throughout the years, the Canby Ferry was damaged during various floods and storms, but the worst would come in January 1946, when heavy rains and high waters ripped the ferry from its moorings and smashed it against the riverbank, where it would eventually go across the Willamette Falls. As one newspaper put it, it was deposited rudely on the rocks. The damage was deemed irreparable, and there wasn't enough money to buy a replacement, so service to the Canby Ferry was discontinued for years, until in 1952, a grassroots effort led by Canby businesses and civic leaders would begin the push to bring the ferry back. We'll tell you that story if you tune in this Thursday for the second part of our series on Canby Then.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome. Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Leanne Garrison and Meow Village. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
Don't call them an antique store. Retro Revival is all about vintage, which is red hot right now thanks to nostalgia from the baby boomer generation and the popularity of 1970s and 80s pop culture homages like Stranger Things. In our next episode, we stop by to chat with owner Susie Joy and hear how she literally fell into the business. Her words. She'll tell us what she thinks makes her store one of the coolest shops in town.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, CanBeNowPod.com.